Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Canto 8, Chapter 6, Texts 17 to 19. I'll read 17 and 18 first, as there's no purport to these verses. Eka ekeshvaras tasmin surakarye sureshvaraha Vihartu kamas tan aha samudron matanadi bihi. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the Demigods, was capable of performing the activities of the demigods by himself, he wanted to enjoy pastimes in churning the ocean. Therefore, he spoke as follows. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Hanta brahmanaho shambho he deva mama bhashitam shotavahita sarve shreyova syadhyata suraha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva and other demigods, please hear me with great attention. For what I say will bring good fortune for all of you. Text 19, please repeat word by word. Yata Dhanava Daiteyai Tavat Sandhihi Vidhiyatam Kalena Kavyena Anugrihitai Tai Yavat Vaha Bhavaha Atmanaha Yata Dhanava Daiteyais Tavat santhir vidhiyatam kalena nugrihitais tair yavadvo bhava atmanaha yata dhanava daiteyais Tavat sandhir vidhiyatam Kalena nugrihitais tair Yavadvo bhava atmanah Verse translation, as long as you are not flourishing, you should make a truce with the demons and asuras who are now being favored by time. Purport, one word in this verse has two readings, kalena and kavyena. Kalena means favored by time, and kavyena means favored by Shukracharya. Shukracharya being the spiritual master of the daityas. The demons and daityas were favored in both ways, and therefore the demigods were advised by the Supreme Lord to execute a truce for the time being until time favored them. Nishridacha kutinati jive hingshan lab Puja Pratishtadi Jato Upashaka Gon. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns the devotees in their prosecution of devotional service not to have their bhakti lata, the creeper of their devotional service, overwhelmed by weeds. in the form of forbidden behavior, nishriyacha, and the second one is kutinati, kugniti, kapattata, diplomatic behavior, cheating. Then envy of other living beings or even of oneself, and the desires for material gain, material respect and position. So this, especially diplomacy, is very bad for Vaishnavas. But here we see that the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself is advising the demigods who have approached Him in all humility to act in a diplomatic way. Actually, everyone in this world has to act diplomatically to some extent, because we have to deal with different types of people within this world, and we have to deal with them differently according to their position and mentality. And that's even not exactly diplomacy, but that is inherent in culture. That, for instance, one behaves very respectfully with seniors, and even with the Supreme Prema Maitri Kripa Peksha, one is advised to love the Supreme Lord, make friendship with His devotees, be merciful to the innocent, and ignore the envious. So deal to different people in different way, different ways. But diplomacy means to act in a certain way that is not revealing what's actually in your heart, dealing with people in such a way that they will become more amenable to what you want them to do. It's a form of trickery. So everyone in this world, especially in the modern age, has to be diplomatic to some extent, otherwise it's very difficult to get anything done or to exist. And actually that's even recommended. Srila Prabhupada would quote that verse of Prabodhananda Saraswati. What is that verse? Dante nidhaya chunakam. How does it go? Padaya nipatya. You know. Kritva. Kritva. Kritva chaka kushatam etadaham bravimi. Hey sadhava, sakalameva vihaya durat chaitanya chandra charane kuruta anuraga. Preaching, diplomacy. That taking a straw in my mouth as a sign of humility, not actually being humble, but pretending to be humble. Well, Vaishnava is humble. Dante nitaya chirakam. Taking straw in the mouth and padayone patya, falling down at the feet and repeatedly addressing the person with great humility, and eventually you tell them, oh, you great personality, give up all the nonsense hogwash ideas in your mind and simply become attached to the lotus feet of Chaitanya Chandra. So, diplomacy is not good, but here we see the Supreme Lord Himself advising the demigods who had come to Him for a solution. They're expecting Him, oh, we don't know what to do, it's time for you to do something. And Krishna says back to them, no, you do something. Why does He not just do something Himself? He can just smash all the demons with a... He doesn't even have to do it Himself. We heard yesterday, Mukunda Prabhu was talking about the fire and the energies. What is that verse? Remember that verse? Ekadesha stithas yagne jyotsna vistarini yata parasya brahmana shaktis tatedam akilam jagat. The Supreme Lord's energies are spread throughout the universe, just like the fire is situated in one place, but the light spreads. So the Supreme Lord can do anything he likes, so why doesn't he just crush the demons? Well, you may say, well, why does he let them to become strong in the first place? Why does he allow that? Just crush them all. Don't allow them to come up. But Krishna gives independence to all living beings. And independence means they can misuse it. Sometimes the demons become very strong. Krishna's allowing them to indulge in their illicit propensities. And it's all very complex because at the same time that they're engaging in their illicit propensities, they're also becoming agents for Krishna's illusory energy to inflict sufferings on others which the others deserve. It's all very complex. Krishna sees everything, everywhere, at all times, and is adjusting everything so that people get their desires fulfilled, and by fulfilling their desires, they also may reward someone who deserves some reward, or they punish someone who deserves some punishment. They become agents of this, and Krishna manages it all. We experience through the senses of this body, and Krishna, again, Mukunda Prabhu was speaking yesterday, kshetrabhyam chapi mang vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata, that although there's the kshetragya, the knower of one body, the individual soul is there, but the Supreme Lord is present within everybody, and he experiences what every single living being is experiencing. And he's not only experiencing, upadrashta. He's not the prime experiencer, but he does so in a secondary role, and anumanta, and he lets it all go on. Why does he let it go on? Because otherwise there wouldn't be any fun if everyone was just a robot. Then there wouldn't be any leela. And exactly this is the reason, which has been described in the previous verses, why the Supreme Lord in this case didn't interfere directly. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the Demigods, was capable of performing the activities of the demigods by himself, he wanted to enjoy pastimes in churning the ocean. Therefore, he spoke as follows. So, he had a reason for doing this. For advising the demigods to be diplomatic. And that will be continued in the next verse, his advice in this way. How to fulfill their desires. The demigods came to Vishnu so that he would help them fulfill their material desires. And the demons, they're also thinking how to fulfill our material desires. So diplomacy is required in a world where everyone's out to fulfill their material desires, and except Krishna, no one's Krishna, so they just can't crush others. When you have enough power, might is right. And when you don't have enough power, then you become interested in justice and peace and rule of law and liberality, that I quoted the other day from Winston Churchill, that the history of the world is that, he said something to that effect, that as long as nations are powerful, they're not much interested in justice and humanity and all this kind of thing. And then when they have the power to institute justice and humanity and all these things, they don't do so. Why should we bother? We'll just crush the others. And the ones who are interested in that, they're the ones who are getting crushed. So you don't actually get much love, peace, humanity, let us all live together peacefully. It doesn't happen much in this world. That's the history of Kali Yuga anyway. Otherwise, there is the rule of dharma also, but people don't have any idea of that. Actually, just getting a little off the point, one of the few useful things I learned at school was something a teacher said to me, just said it to me. He didn't teach it in the class. He said that the best form of government is benevolent dictatorship. But he said it's not possible. That's a very good comment. That's what we believe in, right? Benevolent dictatorship. Yudhishthira, Rama, Parikshit, like that. But he said it's not possible. Because we see the history of the world as is known from the non-Puranic perspective, from the Western perspective, which thinks that civilization began in Greece some, how long, 3,000 years ago, something like that. That all they see is might makes right. Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. There is another alternative, but demons will always be there. And even we find the godly people in this world, they're also, even though they pray to Krishna, they also have their own misunderstood, misplaced self-interest in mind. Nate vidu swarthagating hi Vishnum. This, they don't know that the real goal of life is Vishnu himself. They take Vishnu to, the demigods take Vishnu to be their order supplier. This was a term which, as far as I know, was coined by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In Bengali, he used to say it more elaborately. They think that God is the supplier of the fuel for their blazing fire of lusty desires. But Krishna here, he decided to have a little fun. He wanted to enjoy the pastimes in churning the ocean. Now Krishna, that's one of his qualities mentioned in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, that he's an expert judge of time, place and circumstance. And we see that Krishna often employs that propensity, as he will do in the upcoming pastimes. The churning of the milk ocean, and a big fight, and eventually there's Bali takes over the universe, and then Vamana comes and cheats Bali Maharaj. He acted diplomatically. So I only want 3 steps of land. 3 steps of land? You? 3 steps of land? And you're so small. And then Brahmana preaches to him, yes, you see, a Brahmana, he shouldn't desire more than he needs. He should be satisfied with whatever he needs. And even if you get everything in the universe, it won't satisfy someone whose senses are not controlled. Okay. That's what you want. That's what you want. Okay. They took 2 steps. Covered the whole universe and said, you said you're going to give me 3 steps of land and you can't even give me 3 steps. You said you're going to give me more and you can't even give me 3 steps of land. You're a cheater. And then again, in the same, this in this Leela, the Supreme Lord came as he came as Vamana, then as Kurama, then as Mohini, and he also manifested himself on top of the Mandarachala. So he manifests himself in very forms. As Mohini, he also, he bewildered the demons by taking the form of a beautiful woman and told them, you see these demigods, they're not very intelligent, so you're very good people. They're just fools. So I'll just give them a little bit of the nectar first just to pacify them, and then I'll give it to you. So he cheated them. She cheated them, sorry. Women sometimes cheat people also. Even in this... So this is sometimes necessary. In the, by doing this, by advising the demigods thus, and by himself showing cheating propensities, Krishna is also giving one kind of instruction to the world, that although so many instructions are there about dharma, but sometimes to fulfill or to practice dharma, one has to practice what is seemingly adharma. Although we train children to be good, if we only train them to be good, then they may be cheated in future. So it may be wise to train them also, just like Panchatantra. Well, that's especially for Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas are trained how to be diplomatic. It's required for Kshatriyas. Brahmanas are not supposed to be diplomatic. They're supposed to be very straightforward in all everything that they do and say. But that's for Brahmanas. But then Vaishya's Srila Prabhupada directly states in his purport, one purport in Bhagavad Gita, that Vaishya's, it's expected that they lie in business. And Shudras, you don't expect them to be honest, or you expect them to steal. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of one landlord. He had one administrator overseeing. He paid him next to nothing. But the man overseeing his estate, he lived luxuriously, and he got his daughters married in all pomp. And he couldn't have done it on the amount of, on the stipend that he was being given by the landlord. But it's understood. Anyway, he's going to take something, so why give him more anyway? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said something similar when so many of his leading devotees came and they were outraged. We're going and collecting money and you have this manager and he's just stealing so much money for himself. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, just leave him. He's managing expertly. I can't get such a good manager even if I paid him. So he let it go on. Remarkable. Some kind of worldly wisdom. That was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's worldly wisdom. He was very straightforward in his talking. But when he was asked to remove or do something about this disciple who everyone charged as stealing from the funds which they were collecting by their hard work, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he refused to do anything about it. So some kind of worldly wisdom is required, and maybe that's most important in Kali Yuga. We have the whole Mahabharata, which is supposed to show what is dharma, but it's almost literally riddled with cases of adharma, or dharma sankat, or where there's some dilemma what to do. If I do this, it will not be dharmic. But if I do the opposite, it also won't be dharmic. And the prime example is Arjuna. He was supposed to fight, that was his dharma. But then he thought, how can I fight against my gurus, especially? Guru Nahatva hi Mahanubha. What to speak of my cousin, brothers? This is not right. So he was in a dilemma. And the Mahabharata's full of things like that. And practically Yudhishthira, sometimes he seems to be too dharmic for his own good. Why did he gamble? And he gambled everything away, including his own wife and brothers and self. And then everything was given back to him, and the next day they called him again. Okay, come and gamble again. And why did he go? He knew what was going to happen. Because he said, well, you know, Dhritarashtra, he told me, so how can I deny him? You might think, well, okay, you can't deny an elder, but in some certain circumstances you should do. It might seem that Yudhishthira was too dharmic. Of course, ultimately Krishna's plan was behind it all, just like we see Duryodhana came as a guest to the palace of Yudhishthira, and it was designed in such a way that land looked like water and water looked like land. So unsurprisingly, Duryodhana fell in the water, which and all the the queens of Krishna who happened to be present, they started laughing. And Yudhishthira wanted to stop them, and Krishna said, no, let them laugh. A guest comes, a respectable person, a king, and you make a fool of him and then laugh at him. And Krishna said, no, let them laugh, let them laugh. He wanted Duryodhana, who was already envious as a snake, to become super envious. He wanted to boil up the envy in Duryodhana's heart. Because he wanted to clear the world of Duryodhana and company, who were overburdening the earth, which is why Krishna came. Bhumi had prayed to Krishna that it's too much. Anyway, I take all kinds of people on my surface, but it's just becoming too much. I can bear all the mountains, but all these demons is too much. You better come and do something. Bhubharaharan, taking away the weight on the earth. For this reason, Krishna comes. And we find people accuse Krishna. He's cheating, he's lying. He induced the very good Yudhishthira, who never told a lie in his life. He induced him to tell a lie. So Krishna's blamed for that. But by doing this, Krishna shows that the end justifies the means, which is a very dangerous idea, unless you have the right end in mind. This ISIS, this Muslim terrorists, or what do they call it? Islamist terrorists. They have maybe that's not a good example, because they think that killing people is part of their dharma. But it can be very dangerous. If the end justifies the means, then you can do anything. But you really have to know if the end is proper. The end here, or the desired result, Krishna wanted to establish Yudhishthira on the throne, a devotee, a pious man, and clear out the demoniac people who are populating the earth. But of course, we don't see at the present time, although we don't know what can happen, but we don't see ourselves literally fighting and killing others. You never know. Anything can happen anytime, but there's no sign of that at the moment. But we may have to engage in some diplomatic dealings with others so as to effect our goal of spreading Krishna consciousness. That example is given, Prabodhananda, flattering others. And when they feel inclined to you, then you tell them straightforwardly to surrender to Krishna. But at the same time, you have to be very, very careful, because we can be sidetracked if we think that, well, we can just do anything and everything and mislead others. Even if we're not sidetracked from our goal, it may be misunderstood, just like, for instance, in the late 1970s or mid-1970s through to the 1980s, our devotees in America were distributing books by a method that was perceived by the public as cheating them, the change-up. Someone agrees to buy a book, and then the book distributor says, could you give me a big note, because I have so many small notes? Give me a $20 bill and I'll give you $1 bills back. And then, so he starts. So he gives a $20 bill and says, "Yeah, I'll give you $5." So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is that okay? Stops at 15. So his original intention was to give $5, but by trickery, he takes more. So this became, in one sense, it was very good, because the people were giving more money to Krishna and getting more books. devotees, their intention was to please Srila Prabhupada and Krishna by doing so, but the effect was disastrous. The public became very disillusioned and inimical about our movement. So we have to be very careful in being diplomatic, and we have to judge very carefully how we deal with others. Although some diplomacy is required, at heart we have to keep very pure our intention only to serve Krishna. Not only our intention, but our methodology also, giving that example of the change-up. So our sadhana has to be very good, association has to be very good, we have to be very clear. We're only doing this for Krishna. Of course, sometimes we see devotees who seem, they say, yes, we're only doing it for Krishna, but they seem to... It seems that the way they deal with others is such that there doesn't seem to be, or they have the idea that I'm doing this all for Krishna, and everyone should just do whatever I say without questioning, and that will be good for them. This I believe is the reasoning in their mind, and they can become very strong on others and. Burn people out, to use that burned out expression. It appears that they're on a power trip, megalomania, which they justify in the name of serving Krishna. So we have to be very careful. We have to be diplomatic. It's sometimes required. But... very careful also, and how can we do it? Well, it's difficult to know. When we deal with others, it's often very difficult to understand what's going on in their heart, and sometimes even unknowingly we may offend others. On the other hand, if we're so careful that we never say anything, we're very, very careful never to say anything which might offend. In that case, we should just not speak anything, because anything can be misunderstood. But we always praise others. We don't want to point out if something's wrong, because we might offend them. Tava Viprabhu, you sent that link to me, the anthropologist, and there was one little anecdote there how. A couple of devotees in Mayapur went to the Gauranga Pizzeria in Mayapur, which is a place you can go if you want to be a little bit in Maya, but not too much. Or not really in Maya, but on the border. So it describes, the anthropologist didn't say that, but the two young men went to the pizzeria and they sat down, and then the waitress came. And she said to one of them, "How are you?" And he said, "Well, I'm feeling much better after you came." And then the other devotee who went with him said, "You shouldn't speak like that. You shouldn't flirt with her. That's Maya." And the other one just didn't say anything. What a scene. And then the next day, the other devotee came back to him and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't judge you. You're senior to me, and I don't know what's in your heart. Maybe you're a pure devotee, and I don't know." So I thought by reading that, I mean, obviously the man was flirting with the waitress, who was a devotee. She obviously had exchanges with him before. The flirting was an ongoing thing, and it's nonsense. You shouldn't go to Mayapur to flirt. Actually, you shouldn't go anywhere to flirt. So he was right in pointing it out. Maybe, or let's put it this way, the thing he pointed out was correct. Maybe he should have referred it to someone else who was senior to that devotee, who could have spoken to him. But his idea, "I shouldn't have been judgmental, maybe you're a pure devotee and I don't know." This is... a misunderstanding, a misapplication of the principle of not criticizing others. If we take that to be an absolute principle, never to criticize others, then we can never preach, we can never train others, we can never distinguish between right and wrong. And my own experience in Bangladesh in the 1980s is that I'd give me a little insight into what Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur was up against, because he was so heavy against all these sahajiyas, sampradayas, and people were shocked when you say, "No, no, this is wrong. You shouldn't eat fish. You shouldn't smoke bidis." What? You're criticizing? He's a Vaishnava. What do you mean, Vaishnava? Vaishnavas don't eat fish. Come on, all the Vaishnavas eat fish. Who are you? You're just new. We're born as Vaishnavas. And all the Vaishnavas we've ever known, they all eat fish. Our guru eats fish. And who the hell are you to say not to eat fish? They didn't say like that because they were very, very humble. But that was their understanding. Someone should point it out. Because it's being pointed out, maybe more diplomatically than I did, then I think it was last time I went to Bangladesh, at one town, Narasinghdi, I was giving a talk there. And I said, when I first came here about 40 years ago, there was not one single vegetarian in the town. All the Hindus were fish eaters. Maybe some of them are meat eaters too. And now I said, there are hundreds. And one of the devotees there corrected me. I said, "Shoto ekon shoto shoto ache." Now there are hundreds and hundreds. He said, "Nah, haja haja." Now there are thousands and thousands. Oh! So, ISKCON's preaching has had an effect there. So that's very good. But because of the misunderstanding that had been propagated that you never criticize anyone, then so much sinfulness had entered the Vaishnava Sampradaya. And some of the things were almost comical, that the professional kirtan singers, after they finished their gig, 2 hours singing, then the widows come and give them bidi seva. It means they bring bidis to them, and for 2 hours they couldn't smoke because they were doing kirtan. Now, you have to satisfy them because they're Vaishnavas. It became so ridiculous. But they thought it was all part of Vaishnavas. And things can go so badly. So Srila Prabhupada very kindly made things very clear for us, what is right and what is wrong. That is required. Unless we know what is right and what is wrong, then how will we distinguish? That's the whole problem of philosophy in the Western world, that people people are simply going on the mental platform. Srila Prabhupada, in discussing one of the most prominent and influential philosophers in the Western world, Immanuel Kant, Srila Prabhupada immediately found the fault in anyone's... the fault of all of them is that they're just speculating. But this Immanuel Kant said that we accept God, but we accept God because there must be, in a moral universe, there must be a supreme good, supremely good being. But then there must be morality. He forwarded the moral argument for the existence of God, but then he didn't define what morality is. And Prabhupada pointed that out. And then that means that God is a construct, as the atheists would say, that God is a construct of your mental speculation. Because you think what's moral, but then there's no fixed morality. But the Bhagavad Gita gives it very clearly. Yah, shastra vidimushra. Tasmat shastram pramanam te karya karyo vyavastito. Gyatva shastram vidhanoktam karyam kartamiharhasi. One should know what is in shastra and act accordingly. One should know what is right and what is wrong according to shastra. But then even beyond, beyond Shastra. Beyond Shastra, how is there beyond Shastra? There's nothing beyond Shastra, but every situation cannot be described in Shastra because the world is very complex. And that's, again, the story of Mahabharata, that all kinds of complex situations arise, and it may have to be that someone who's committed to dharma, they perform an act which is seemingly in contradiction to the rules of Shastra, but they may have to do so for a higher end. On the other hand, those who don't know what the higher end is, or who are not completely committed to that, they should simply follow and not speculate. And therefore, there are brahmanas required in society to give proper guidance. Those who know the Shastra and who know how to apply it. Jnana, vijnana. They're not bookworms, simply studying, but they know how to give practical guidance also. We see that one reason that Srila Prabhupada was able to attract and engage so many disparate kinds of people in devotional service was his ability to judge their mentality and deal with them accordingly. And Srila Prabhupada was very expert in dealing with all different kinds of people. His heavy chastisement was mostly reserved for disciples who he trusted could take it. In every case, he didn't deal with people very strongly. There was one devotee living in Mayapur who, by his personality, was causing everyone so much disturbance. He also had a guitar. He liked to play a guitar. And devotees were complaining to Prabhupada, so Prabhupada called him, and I don't know what the devotees were thinking. The devotees were thinking he was going to really get on his case, but Prabhupada said, "Oh, you're a very good guitar player. Why don't you go all over the world and chant Hare Krishna with your guitar? That'll be a great preaching." And the devotee, feeling very enlivened, left Mayapur with his guitar, and everyone felt relief that he had left. So, without discouraging that devotee by saying, "Hey, look, you're just disturbing everyone, get the hell out of here," he encouraged him, and at the same time, the purpose was served. He behaved diplomatically with him, you could say. Once a devotee complained to Prabhupada, this was in Bombay, that, "I can't stand it staying here in India anymore, everyone's cheating us, all the Indians are cheaters." Prabhupada said, "Well, I'm also an Indian." He said, "No, no, Prabhupada, you're different." He said, "No, no, I cheated you also. You were living very happily in America and I brought you here and made you struggle, and you work so hard for me and you don't take any payment. I cheated you also." You could maybe say that. In the early days, Prabhupada, he just said, "Chant Hare Krishna and be happy." And then later he said, "Get up for Mangalati." Even the first initiates, they were initiated, and they said, "What does initiation mean?" And then Prabhupada said, "You accept the spiritual master as good as God. And no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication." They weren't even told that before the initiation. Really? He cheated them. In the beginning, Prabhupada, he had long hair, initiated, okay. Later on, "Those who are keeping long hairs are not my disciples." You could say it's cheating, but we'd be happy to be cheated in such a way, because Prabhupada was acting for our best benefit. And so many examples are there, Srila Prabhupada gave, that, for instance, the mother wants to give some bitter medicine to the child, but the child is refusing, so the mother brings a nice laddu. "Open your mouth!" Opens his mouth, and with the other hand she quickly thrusts in a spoon of medicine. Too late. She cheated him. So even Even dealing with children, there has to be diplomacy. What to speak of when they get older and more cunning. Actually, a lot of the training of children is to make them less cunning, isn't it? Because child means that they're fully self-centered, and they think, well, that's the way the world's meant to be. From at the beginning, everything I do, I'm fed, I'm bathed, I'm clothed, and when I scream, they come, what's up? Try to help them. And eventually they have to learn, well, there are other people in the world apart from you, and the whole world doesn't actually revolve around you, although it might have seemed like that, and we have to live cooperatively with others. So, cheating, yeah. That point about India, we know how Prabhupada struggled so much to establish this Krishna Conscious Movement in India. But one of the things we may not realize so much is, apart from struggling with various demons and trying to get permission and trying to get cement, one of his main struggles was with his own disciples, to try to keep them in India. It didn't make any sense. What are we struggling here in India for when there's a fantastic preaching field in the West? We go and preach and people surrender to Krishna, they become fully sincere, and you come here in India and you talk with them and they say, yeah, we know Krishna, we know. So Srila Prabhupada had the vision. Now we can see. Unfortunately, the preaching in America is not at the same high pitch as it used to be, but Srila Prabhupada's vision is... what's the word? It's justified by his pushing his disciples against their will in many cases to stay in India and struggle. Then Srila Prabhupada had the vision that this movement can become very prominent here in India. So sometimes he would diplomatically deal with his disciples to get them to stay. Prabhupada Vishnu Swami told me several times, Srila Prabhupada brought him, he knew he was a good manager, he was managing the whole of the ISKCON in Britain, he was the unofficial manager. And then Prabhupada brought him to Bombay and made him temple president. And again he would go to Prabhupada and say, Prabhupada, can you please let me go to the... Please, I can't stand it anymore, dealing with all this legal matters day after day after day. And it's too much. And again, Prabhupada... No. I want to go to the West and do like the Radha Damodar Party, traveling Sankirtan all over America. I want to organize that in England. You think Prabhupada would say, well, that's a great idea. Prabhupada would say, you do it here in India? Prabhupada is being diplomatic. And then... eventually, Prabhupada Vishnu Swami told me that. Well, eventually I thought, well, Prabhupada wants me to stay, so I'd better stop trying to argue with him. But other of Prabhupada's disciples, they argued with him very strongly, and they left. And they were shouting at Prabhupada, Shuta Kirti Prabhu, and Prabhupada was shouting back, and then eventually said, okay, you go. You can go, but I cannot. You can give it up, but I cannot. So devotees didn't understand, but eventually Prabhupada's vision became manifest. So some diplomacy is required, but not to the extent where it becomes politics. Politics means we're acting diplomatically with others, and we have some ulterior motive for our own personal gain. That's very bad. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, kutinati, one should not act in a diplomatic way, that refers to pretending to be a Vaishnava. That is the whole situation of the material world, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur coined this phrase, vanchaka vanchita sampradaya. The cheaters, the sampradaya of cheaters and cheated. And the whole material world is going on like that. Some diplomacy is required. Generally, we should be very straightforward in our preaching. But sometimes someone, they may be preaching and speaking very strongly and clearly and saying the truth, but It's just too much. People just can't. It's too much for them to accommodate all at once. It seems too harsh to them. So the point doesn't get across. So it's a very great art how to administer the medicine without killing the patient. On the other hand, not administering the medicine because the patient doesn't want to take it. Somehow or other you have to give the medicine, but you have to give it in such a way, and you have to know how to give. You give the medicine, you give this medicine, you have to take it with food, this medicine you take without food, this medicine you have to take in milk, this one you have to take in honey, this one you take in water. It's a whole science of how to administer it. And on the other hand, we may not be so expert, but still somehow or other we have to try and preach and administer the medicine. We may learn as we go along, and in the meantime, kill a few patients. Well, that's not very good, is it? That's why the doctors, they have internship, that they're supposed to study for at least 1 year under a experienced doctor. Then they themselves can start to practice themselves. But even then, the doctors kill so many patients. Prabhupada himself said he was working in that, he was a pharmacist. He said so many doctors used to tell me, oh, we accidentally kill so many patients by giving the wrong medicine. And they don't mean to, but you can never be, they can never be sure actually what's wrong with them exactly or how much dose they need. Just like in anesthesia, it's a really delicate art. That's why they weigh you, they take your blood pressure, they take your medical history. Because if you put too much anesthesia, they'll go to sleep nicely, they'll do the operation, and they never wake up. And if you don't put enough, then you're still in the middle of the operation and they wake up. It really has to be done very properly. You may think, well, it's just jabbing someone, but it's a whole science how to do it. And naturally, sometimes they do things wrong. But so that's there in preaching also. Sometimes we may burn people out. Prabhupada himself, someone came to him in Bombay and said something about Ramakrishna Mission. And the next thing, he was running down the stairs, running away from Prabhupada in anger because Prabhupada had blasted him. And then after one devotee told me that afterwards Prabhupada said, oh. He Prabhupada expressed disappointment that I shouldn't speak so straightforward. On the other hand, if Prabhupada didn't speak straightforwardly, then we wouldn't know what the ultimate truth is. We might be victimized also, just as pretty much everyone is victimized, thinking Vivekananda, Ramakrishna, wonderful. Prabhupada made it clear for us. Not everyone was ready to accept that. Still, people are not ready to accept that. After one lecture in Bombay, Prabhupada was speaking so strongly and people were leaving. They found it was too much. Mostly people come to a talk by a sadhu and they think, oh, we'll hear something very nice. We're feeling so much disturbance in our life. Let's go and hear something religious and make us feel peaceful. And Prabhupada said, you're all like cats and dogs. And it became too much for someone. And they'd leave. And afterwards Prabhupada said, yeah, better to write books. And let them have it in the books. So Srila Prabhupada dedicated his time and his energy and his life, his main service, writing the books and everything straightforwardly there in his books, including the pastime of the Supreme Lord, teaching to be diplomatic. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment? Any diplomatic questions? Why are you talking so long? Who the hell do you think you are? Say it diplomatically. Please. Otherwise, I might become upset and run away. Or I might blast you. Who the hell do you think you are? Rascal. Question, comment, question, what's for breakfast? Same every day, no need to ask.
Hare Krishna.
You have a question, yeah.
So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna in the 10th chapter that of those who seek victory, of those who want to attain some success, I am morality. Or even he says, I'm niti, not even dharma.
I am niti.
So how can we understand that?
Nitir asmi jigishata.
And then after he asks him to kill Karna in some sense, that is not so niti.
Krishna says, of those who seek victory, I am morality. But then he's inciting Arjuna to fight, not to resort to niti or discussion. Well, that had already been tried and failed. He'd gone past that. So the point is that for those who seek victory, it's best to do it by in a peaceable way. But actually Krishna didn't want it in this case. He went to negotiate with the Kauravas because he didn't want peace. But he wanted to make a show of it. Just like someone has to protect the chickens. Mr. Fox comes and says, I'll protect them. I'll look after them. The owner comes back. What happened to the chickens? Mr. Fox says, I looked after them. So Krishna wanted them removed from the world because enough, there's a time and a place for niti, for negotiation. But then when all fails, then it has to come to war. That's all. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyascha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.
His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami Ki. Jai.